Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very, very exciting young man who has built some amazing businesses. Mohit Agarwal, welcome to the show. Mohit is from IIT Delhi. He's an MS from the University of California. He's worked with Connexion Systems, Zentrum Technologies, and interestingly, he's the founder of Adda 52, which has become India's leading online poker website. And I understand you've exited recently.
That's right.
So, Mohit, tell me a little bit about your early career, your early learnings, and maybe some of your challenges.
Yeah. First of all, thanks, Ashutosh, for having me here. So, when I graduated from Berkeley, you know, it's one of the top colleges in the world.
Correct.
Naturally, I had great expectations for myself. There was a question in front of me whether to stay in the US or come back to India. At that point, I sort of had the notion that India was on the cusp of an explosive growth and a lot of disruptions. So I chose to shift my basis to India.
Mm-hmm.
And I took up my first job in Bangalore in a startup called Athium Systems.
Okay.
That, according to me, turned out to be a great decision. And I would say it ended up defining me in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad that that happened at that point of time. It was a young company at that point of time when I joined it, and we were trying to create some very high-end signal processing IPs from India, and that was something which hadn't been done specifically from India at all, considering that, you know, talent of that nature was very, very acute, at least in those days in India. And so what it gave me was this whole notion of, you know, self-belief that we would try, very small team, and we were trying to fight huge odds and pull off something very significant. So gave me a huge self-belief that if the teamwork is done right, and teamwork is something which I think somewhere, at least I felt that is not taught so well in curriculums.
Mm-hmm.
At least at that point of time. So it was a lot of good individual efforts that, you know, one could bank on that, you know, as a person, you know that you're strong, but I learned a lot about self-belief and teamwork at that first company of mine.
Okay.
That I could carry into Connexion, where I joined next and managed to build a fantastic team there. In fact, managed to write a few patents.
Mm-hmm.
Doing some, you know, really nice cutting edge signal processing work, which I'm very proud of.
So, you know, you have several patents registered in the US.
Uh-huh.
Tell us a little bit about these patents.
So, you know, frankly, those seem to be like past life now, because that was like really long ago. And I would frankly credit them more to teamwork than anything else. Naturally, we were trying to do fairly cutting edge stuff.
Mm-hmm.
At that point of time, we were trying to create a Wi-Fi chip from India.
Mm-hmm.
And while Wi-Fi chips had been done globally, but none had been done from India. And so, so there were, you know, these are fairly technically involved kind of patents where we were trying to solve for a certain kind of interference.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had sort of found a nice novel way of, mm-hmm. of doing it for ourselves.
Wonderful.
And that's what we ended up patenting. So, but I think, yeah, more than the, I think the whole fact that we could, you know, there were teams outside globally, which had like PhDs and, you know, highly accomplished
mm-hmm.
people. And so, we were sort of like, you know, being able to outdo them on their own game in our own ways.
Sure.
So that was the fun part of the whole journey.
So after that,
yeah,
you founded Adda 52.
That's right.
And so tell me a little bit about Adda 52. It's
yeah.
such a fascinating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's fascinating from outside, and you won't believe it. It was, you know, 10x fascinating from inside.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Even to begin with, you know, just like you mentioned that from a signal processing VLSI kind of a chip making background
mm-hmm.
to a software online gaming kind of a product,
mm-hmm.
there was just the transition was too
huge.
Stark.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I remember, you know, meeting an investor And he was like, so there were two of us, me and my co-founder Anuj, and he was like, you don't know how to make anything online and you don't know how to sell anything online and you expect me to fund you.
So
we realized that, you know, there is going to be always a lot of no's, and it's not important to, so it's important to sort of have a good appetite for hearing no's. As long as you hear enough yeses. So, you know, that's the key part that you need to dwell on, that, you know, you need to develop a bit of thick skin, that, you know, there are obviously people going to say no for various reasons. Well-intentioned people, for sure. This whole no track, we were to realize, you know, would continue in ADA 52 for a lot longer and for a little harder than we had hoped for. And that was because of the whole nature of the business.
Correct.
Which is that, you know, while on the legal stand front, we were sort of, we had taken opinions from lawyers and you know, all possible precautions to make sure that this was legit. Because, you know, we were all, you know, well-educated boys trying to do this and didn't want to really break any law. But the perception of doing poker with real money, which is, you know, for that matter, any card game with real money, the first perception across the country is that it must be gambling and therefore illegal. And so we had to fight that perception, you know, step by step, every step with, you know, each single interview we would do for hiring, to investments, to partners, to everything. So that was a constant battle that we fought.
And was there interference of the government also?
Actually, no.
Okay.
Actually, no. So there wasn't any interference from the government. There continued to be litigations across the country in a few states where, you know, somewhere or the other, this question keeps arising. And then, you know, that question obviously gets addressed in the court based on past precedences and stuff like that. So that continues to be the case. But I think the largest challenges end up coming from battling perceptions.
Correct. So out of so many card games that are played in India, why poker?
So actually, two reasons. One was that... there are very few card games which can be called games of skill.
I see.
Right. And the key nuance here is that only when a game is a game of skill can it be done for real money in India. So Rummy, Poker, Bridge, these are the three card games which are sort of recognized by legislature and recognized by a few courts as specifically, explicitly being games of skill.
Oh, I see. That's very
interesting. So that was, that sort of shortened the list. And out of these, our belief was that poker is a younger game, obviously not a very native to India, frankly, but you know, when we were just starting out, we could see that there was a huge trend of youngsters taking to it. So
what I'm hearing you say is that the Indians' favorite game at Diwali, Teen Patti, you only need a poker face but doesn't need skill.
Oh, right. That's true. That's true. And yes, which is why you see that there is so much move nowadays from Teen Patti to poker. Because you know, you end up applying your skill and so it therefore becomes even more entertaining game, right? Because you're sort of not just doing it to pass time, but now you're... your mind also ends up getting active.
So, you know, tell me, Indians love to gamble, you know, as do Chinese.
That's right.
And gambling is not permitted either in India or in China, which is why casinos around the world are filled with Chinese and a lot of Indians. What do you think would happen in India if gambling was legitimized?
So, gambling, for that matter, is legitimized in some states in India. For example, in Goa, they have issued licenses and there is a listed company called Delta Corp, which runs casinos on the river, which is, you know, a licensed government authorized endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
And the results are there for everyone to see, that it is packed at all times of the day. Goa has become the destination that it has become in some parts to that casino. And so, according to me, gambling is a very fundamental human endeavor.
Correct.
And so, I think legalizing it would just sort of legalizing it in more states in the country would just sort of open up the industry to larger investments, and then, you know, we can hope to see Macau and Vegas level casinos in the country.
I know the people who run the Marina Bay Sands, and you know, gambling was banned in Singapore, and then this was changed, and it's completely changed the economy of that whole area.
Yeah, that's right.
Very interesting. So let's move from Adda 52 to you as a startup entrepreneur. You know, I think you've got so many different avatars and different forms from after you came out of Berkeley. You said you had a co-founder, and I often ask people who come to our show that, is it better to do a startup alone or with a co-founder, and what would your reasons be?
I think, according to me, it is hugely important to have a co-founder. And one of the reasons is that, just like, you know, it takes, you know, a village to raise a child, so it takes more than a person to raise a company. And what happens is that, you know, each individual would have certain strengths, which is why they should be doing that company. But at the same time, everybody has blind spots and weaknesses. And I think having a co-founder in with complementary skills fundamentally makes the team stronger, because then you know, one can sort of consciously complement each other, you know, by way of covering each other's blind spots. Because, you know, one might be very strong in certain things, but that also means that we're, you know, usually not watching out for some other kind of thing. And so I think having a co-founder helps that complementing thing.
Correct.
And you know, startups, the sort of graph is a very up and down kind of a graph. So I think it also emotionally
you come to balance stresses
and you know, because sometimes something would tick off one person, but then, you know, there's somebody else to
correct
to
well
sort
said.
Of
very well said. So, you know, I'm sure you, of course, you had your own startup, thinking of something new to do. I'm sure you invested in others. According to you, what are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup entrepreneurs make?
Oh, well, there are must be tons of them, because so few of them end up thriving.
Correct.
I think actually depends on the founders. Obviously, the more seasoned ones make more seasoned mistakes. But I think one of the common one that I see happening, especially with the younger co-founders, is that they're too much in the love of the product, whereas they should more be in the love of either the customer or the customer pain. So, you know, it's more like thinking of a product and then saying, what will it do, rather than the other way around, which I think sort of colors the questioning. The second one is, I think that in some cases, I see startups trying to solve too many problems at the same time. They must realize that they're a small company, and so they sort of, the reason to exist must be one or two focused things that they need to do extremely well. And for other things, I think they need to sort of figure out solutions which are almost ready made and sort of ready to use kind of solutions. So I think those, according to me, are two common traits that I see.
That's true. I also sometimes think that a lot of entrepreneurs think that there's an opportunity in everything they see.
Right.
And that's a typical entrepreneurial trait.
That's a typical, yeah. So, you know, they're sort of eternally optimistic
yes.
kind of people. Yeah. So
everything is an opportunity. So let me try everything.
Right.
But then you end up only being able to succeed at a few.
Yeah.
Okay. And another challenge I see a lot of entrepreneurs facing is that, you know, you start in Gurgaon and you want to be pan-India in a few months. When should a startup start to scale up?
Well, I guess you would know better than me on this whole scaling up part, because we operated exactly from one office
okay.
all along.
Okay.
But I think the key is that one must sort of be first have proven the unit.
Mm-hmm.
So different businesses will have a different notion of a unit. B2C online business is what I ran. So there, you know, the unit was that what's the cost at which you acquire a user and what's the sort of amount of money that you expect to earn from the user over the lifetime of the user, which is often called the lifetime value
Correct.
Of the user.
Correct.
And so you need to have some kind of an understanding that this unit is working out positively in your favor.
Mm.
That's the logical time, according to me, for you to
when you start
decide to scale, because you know then the next thing to be proven in the company is that at a small scale, if this unit works, does this work at a large scale? Mm.
You know, a little while ago when we were talking about your experience and facing so many no's
yeah.
and getting some yeses,
mm-hmm.
that leads me to my next question, which is that what would your advice be to an entrepreneur who wants to raise money?
Oh, well, yeah. So raising money, I think my first advice is that if they haven't tried it before, it is hard. It is supposed to be hard because, you know, it's never easy to make somebody
sign a check. Correct.
I think the key advice would be to do it for the right reason. I think, you know, it must be seen as a means to an end, most importantly. I think sometimes, you know, in all the media news and frenzy, we tend to see that as an end in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it is a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And so one must have an eye on that end, which should logically explain that means.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that it takes time. So basically, one must sort of plan a little bit ahead
mm-hmm.
and be a little conservative in terms of if the option is there to sort of raise for a little more than you think you need and raise a little sooner than you think you
mm-hmm.
need, just to be on the sort of, because you don't know, you know, there are businesses have cycles and you know, things can change, and so it's always good to have a little bit of a buffer.
So according to you, how many months money should I have in the bank when I start to think of the next fundraise?
According to me, about 8 to 10 months.
8 to 10 months.
Because the process itself takes 4 to 5 months, and you would sort of be having a much better bargaining chip.
Mm.
If the other person knew that you could go on.
Correct.
See, the best time to raise money is when you don't need it.
Correct.
Right? Because that's when you negotiate the best.
I agree with you. I agree. So moving on, Mohit, you know, I'm not sure if you've had mentors, you know, but if you have, first question is, what have been some of your learnings?
Mm-hmm.
And second question is that, do you think startup entrepreneurs should have mentors?
Right. So I've had mentors. So in my early life, I wouldn't say a mentor, but my elder sister was kind of a role model for me in terms of, you know, when I was growing up. So she went to IIT and then she also went abroad for masters. So it was sort of an easy template for me to look up to her and just sort of try and outdo her in whatever she was doing. So you know that she was a role model for me in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was working in my second job in Connexent, my boss Rajiv, he ended up being a mentor for me. I consider him as a mentor for me. He taught me a few things. So basically, I was transitioning from being an individual contributor to being in sort of leadership roles.
Yeah.
And he was instrumental in making that happen at a very young age for me. I was, I think, about 26, 27 when that was happening. And so the key thing that he taught me, amongst a lot of things, was that one needs to be capable of wearing multiple hats. And so I think, so what I loved about it was that, you know, the kind of visualization that he gave for that, you know, that, you know, you need to sort of take off one hat, right? You might be a team member in one setting, sort of setting. And in some other setting, you might be a manager to those people. Okay. So, you know, so you need to be able to change roles very explicitly in your mind so that you don't mix up the two.
Correct.
And do justice to both correctly. So I think that that held me in good stead, because as an entrepreneur, you're fundamentally expected to sort of be many things because at the same times in different settings. And so, you know, even when I left the company, we stayed in touch, and he would help me out with, you know, I would many times sort of roll back and think that, you know, what would Rajiv do? Even if he weren't there, or even if I wasn't talking to him, I would sort of roll back that, you know, if Rajiv were to be facing this problem, what would he do? And I never cross-checked with him if those were the things that he would have done.
Yeah.
But yeah, it helped out.
Wonderful. So, you know, after so much success that you've seen so early in life, what would be three adjectives or three words that describe Mohit?
Oh, first of all, I think that that success word is a bit tricky. You
know, that's why I didn't use the word success.
So, so basically, I think one of the, so I don't know about three, but I think I can surely think of two words. One is that I consider myself to be very authentic, and I feel that that sort of defines who I am. And the second word that defines me is perseverance. Okay. So, you know, be it education, be it my first few jobs, the startup, I think the ability to persevere would surely differentiate me. That, you know, I remember in my first job, you know, there was a team lead that we used to have, and I used to see him sitting in the lab and doing experiments, and he was an extremely patient man. And so, you know, he said that this is a great skill, that, you know, you see that, okay, Edison did so many inventions, nobody knows that how many times, how many hours in the lab he sat and did all those wrong experiments to come up with the right ones. And so he taught me that, you know, if there is something to be done 500 times to get it right, then you sort of have the appetite for it, or don't dream for that
correct
goal. So, so yeah, I think those would be the two things
that's well said. So my next question is, you know, most people who play cards are very superstitious.
Right. Tell me something about that. I've seen more than a few.
Correct. Do you have any superstitions?
No, I don't have any superstitions. I'm sort of, though I allow people around me to have their own superstitions, so that way I by nature I tend to make people around myself comfortable with whatever they believe, because even if I might not agree with you know, their superstition. So I personally don't have any superstitions. Okay.
So my next question to you would be, you know, on failure. Most of us in India don't teach failure to our children. Most startup entrepreneurs are never told that if you fail, it doesn't matter. What are your thoughts on failure, and what would be some of your learnings?
You are absolutely right, and this was an observation that, in fact, I had distinctly. I remember when I was in Berkeley, and I think I was interacting with somebody who was doing PhD at the age of about 35, 36, which in my mind was a failure, because that is how I was trained to think about it, that, you know, if you're in college at 36, there's something wrong
with you. Absolutely.
Right. And that is where that conversation struck me, that this guy was an Iranian, and he was into sports and into various things. And then at 27, he realized that he wanted to study, and then he got married and then did that X and Y. And then that eventually led him to doing a PhD, and he was doing a great one. Mm. And so I think less about the founders, but more about society in general, that our society doesn't believe in giving second chances. It sort of believes that, you know, somebody is born with it and something has to happen in only an X way for it to be right. Which that interaction, I distinctly remember busting that notion that, you know, this, what's wrong, right? This is this guy's choice, and he's making it happen for himself. So I think it's the society that needs to understand that that, you know, everybody deserves a second chance. Correct. And a third chance.
Correct.
I think founders mostly, I'm sure the environment has matured enough, so they would know that, you know, there are a lot of failures.
Correct.
So I'm sure when they're getting into it, they would get into it knowing that there are failures. But I think the society needs to have that culture.
Correct. What would be some of your learnings from some failures you may have had?
Well, there were a lot of learnings. Why I don't like to label them as failures is because that puts a finality to them.
Correct. So let's call it a mistake.
Like in a test match, you know, there are 15 sessions. So you lose some sessions, you win some sessions, but, you know, the match goes on.
Correct.
When I think around 2014-15, one of the team members had brought up this whole concept that in the real money gaming, there was this concept coming up of daily fantasy sports, which is, you know, that you could make a team and then wager some money on it and win some money. And we were already a pioneer in real money in gaming space. And so this guy said that, you know, listen, we should invest in this and do this. This seems to be, cricket seems to be a religion in India. So this might end up becoming even bigger than poker. And we ran some numbers I was the one, in fact, who took the decision that this, you know, might end up being too small and might end up being a waste of our time. So we decided not to look at that. And I remember in 2017, when, you know, we started seeing Dream 11 do so well, you know, it just struck me that, you know,
it was the one that got away.
It was the one that definitely got away. Oh. So yeah, that tells me that, you know, now I need to be better at before writing off something.
Correct. So Mohit, thank you very much. This has been an absolutely incredible conversation with you. Good luck with your new venture. And once you are ready with your new venture, I hope to get you back again and talk about your new venture.
Absolutely.
So thank you again.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.